On this episode of Newt's World, the recent win by Glenn Youngkin, the Republican candidate, in the Virginia governor's race surprised some people, since he was running against Terry McAuliffe, a Democrat who had served as Virginia's governor from 2014 to 2018. Some underestimated Youngkin's ability to win because Virginia has recently turned from being a red to a blue state, and Joe Biden carried the state by some 10 points. But for the voters of Virginia, an important issue emerged during the election: education. Voters challenged the right of school boards to dictate what happens in schools versus what influence and voice parents should have about what happens in the children's education. So much of the national attention about school boards focused on Loudoun County, Virginia, where parents demanded accountability from their school board over critical race theory being taught in classrooms. And when candidate Terry McAuliffe said in the debate, quote, "I'm not going to let parents come into schools and actually take books out and make their own decision," McAuliffe said during the debate, "I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach." Well, that one comment made parents everywhere sit up and pay attention, and the issue of education drove voters to the polls. I wanted to hear from two people deeply involved in the school board issue in Virginia, so I'm really pleased to welcome my two guests. Shi Van Fleet, who made an extraordinary speech to the school board in Loudoun County, and Adam Waldeck, the president of 1776 Action, an advocacy organization fighting anti-American indoctrination in schools. I want to welcome both of you and thank you for joining me today. I think it's important for people to realize that critical race theory is a fancy term for basically splitting Americans into different tribes based on race, on their skin color, and basically arguing that everything that happens is a function of what has been a dominant class, which is white, and everybody else is supposed to mobilize against the dominant class and ensure that people who are white recognize how guilty they must be because they've been dominant, and that now it's the turn for every other group to be dominant instead. And the result is that that gets translated, particularly for young children, into a very divisive skin color oriented model that is the opposite of what Reverend Martin Luther King wanted when he said that what mattered was the content of our character, not the color of our skin. And it's further, I think, perverted by Democratic politicians because they don't seem to realize, for example, when Terry McAuliffe on the last Sunday before the election said that there were too many white teachers that students didn't have someone to identify with, I don't think McAuliffe understood how complicated Virginia had become. This isn't about white and black. This is about Chinese, Korean, Vietnamese, Latino, Native American, Pakistani, Indian Americans. I mean, the range of people who now come here, I mean, you can't try to figure out, for example, in Chicago with over 160 languages, how are you going to make sure that a Hmong student or a Cambodian student gets a teacher that is Hmong or Cambodian? What we ought to be saying is, I want every child to have an excellent teacher, to get an excellent education, to have a great life. And I don't care actually what the race of the teacher is if they're excellent. And frankly, I don't care what the race of the teacher is if they're bad. Bad teachers shouldn't be in the room. And I think a good teacher should be almost without regard to race. And then everyone should learn, if you work hard and you study, you too can rise and you too can have an exceptional life. I don't know if that captures it, Shi, for you and Adam, but that's sort of my take on it.
To me, that just reminds me of Mao's class conflict theory. I call it CCT. And CRT and CCT, same thing. One goal, divide. Divide people. Divide people using different criteria. One with race, another use class. Exactly the same thing. It is both Marxism.
Shi, how did you become involved in what was going on in the schools in Loudoun County?
Well, for me, the story is because of my experience of the Cultural Revolution, I noticed something is not right for a long time. I just noticed young people, especially children of Chinese immigrants, that they would make comments such as, this country is just a racist country, and that and we are privileged that because Chinese immigrants, mostly very successful, especially in this area, and that we don't understand what oppression is. And to us, it is just alarming because many of the Chinese immigrants come to this country. We just love this country, and we love the opportunity that we were given to achieve our American dreams. But back then, I did not have a name like CRT. I just noticed that the school were teaching children to hate this country. And of course, after witness 2020, and I just said, this is absolutely cultural revolution. And I just feel like I got to do something. And I did not really know what to do. Never involved politically.
I mean, you had a unique vantage point because you grew up in Mao Zedong's communist China during the Cultural Revolution. And I think your witness about that, which you talked about in your speech, I think if you could share with us your sense that critical race theory has its roots in cultural Marxism and your own experience from China and why you value freedom in America so much, I think it helps people to get your kind of first-person witness to what's going on.
Yes. The major similarity between CRT and what I experienced in the Cultural Revolution is the big division. And here we know it's race, critical race theory. But growing up in Mao's China, Mao used class, and he has a book with the title Class Conflict Theory. And that's the lens that we are taught to look at everything. We look at everything in terms of class. Mao divided the whole China into like two camps. The oppressors were belong to the black camp, and the so-called oppressed belong to the red camp. We're taught that the people belong to the black camp are enemies, and we know who they are, even in school. And that's not it. And also the label is hereditary. Once your parents were deemed as class enemy, you pass that to your children and children's children. And to me, that is absolutely CRT. And it's not like whether you are a racist. No, if you are born a certain way, you become racist. It's just exactly what I experienced in China.
Did you feel when you were still a young person growing up in China, did you feel that you were coerced to say and believe these things, whether you believed them or not, because you would be somehow punished or discriminated against if you didn't say the right things?
I think it's more than that. We were taught in such a way that we don't even question. We just follow. And so you don't even have the ability to think and say, oh, this is not quite right, but I should better say it because otherwise I'll get punished. No, you don't even think that way. You just obey. And so that is another thing, indoctrination. And we were so indoctrinated, we were not able to think.
When you went through this indoctrination, when you look back on it, was it literally so overwhelming that you had to sort of deprogram yourself once you got out of it? I mean, how did you move from somebody who had been totally overwhelmed by indoctrination to somebody who obviously today can think for yourself?
Well, I think it's a long process, especially after I came here. I think the process of detox of my mind took a long time, yes. But at the end of the Cultural Revolution, when Deng Xiaoping opened up, we start to get information, and information is the key. Before, we only have one version of everything. Everything we learned, there's one truth, and that's the party line. So with information, I started to see, oh my God, this is not exactly what we were taught. So there is a process. And I think what the young people going on now is that they were giving one version of the so-called truth. And even though the information is available, they were not taught to do so-called your own research. They were just like overwhelmingly from the educational system, from the media, just one voice. That's just kind of like a cultural revolution. But of course, cultural revolution, we have absolutely no access to any other information.
I'm very curious, when you come out of this brainwashing experience, how did you end up having the courage to come to the U.S.? As I understand it, you were about 26 years old when you showed up here. I mean, how did that happen, given the degree to which you had been surrounded by Maoist thought?
Well, after Deng Xiaoping opened up, we said, oh my God, the world is so big and it's much better than what we had here. I think that is just the fact that nobody can deny and everybody dreamed of going to America. I remember the first time I watched an American movie and I was like, oh my God, that was an amazing place. So everybody wanted to go and I was lucky enough to, there is an American teacher who helped me to get assistantship in the university. So I came here to study.
Where did you first come to?
Kentucky, in all places. Yeah, and I studied English. But the process is slow, but there is a turning point when the world was opened up to us, and that was a shock. Before, we were told we were the luckiest kids in the whole world because we were born into the new communist China, and we were so proud. I thought we are the luckiest kids on earth because we did not know anything else.
Kentucky must have been a shock.
Yeah. It was a culture shock. Yeah, one of the things I remember is that it was a small town. It's in Bowling Green, Kentucky. It was like, there's nobody here. I just feel like this is not a town because there's nobody on the street. In China, it's people everywhere. You can't escape. That's one thing I remember so vividly. There's nobody around.
Where were you from in China?
I'm from Chengdu.
Okay.
Sichuan.
Where the pandas are.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. Yes, it's the main attraction, yeah, for that city.
Chengdu is actually a big city.
A very big city. And now it's a mega city. Yeah.
It's amazing how many people there are in China. The times I visited and Clifton and I visited, it's a remarkable culture, despite some of the challenges. So you come out of Kentucky, you end up ultimately in Virginia, and you're living in Loudoun County. When did you begin to realize something was wrong?
Okay, tell you the truth, I've never paid enough attention to politics. I never really understood politics. I just have no clue. And I mind my own business and get a job and buy a house, you know, all that things. I think the first time I noticed something, it's Senator Trent Lott. And he was accused of, I don't even remember the detail, but something about being a racist. And then he has to quit. I said, wow, that kind of reminds me of Cultural Revolution. But then I did not give much thought to it. And then I just continued paying no attention until I think probably past decade. I just started to see more and more things that remind me of the Cultural Revolution, the political correctness. And it's getting so much worse in the past few years. And the turning point for me is the chaos on the street, the BMM, the Antifa. And I, at that point, I said, I got to do something. So every day after work, I would listen to podcasts and YouTube, whatever. And one day I was listening to Dan Bongino, and he was talking about the things. I said, oh, great, great, great. And then he said, get involved. And find out your local Republican committee and join them. I remember that moment. I said, oh, this is how you get involved. And I stopped and I Googled and I found Loudoun County Republican Committee. And that's how exactly I got started.
That's wild. So did you go to a meeting then?
Well, it's COVID time. So the first thing we did is Zoom. So I joined, I paid my fee. I said, okay, now I'm going to do something. And then it's the Zoom meeting. And then we met the candidates. And I can't remember Yang King. I do remember Sears. And then I continued to listen to podcasts. And then I heard Don Schultz about the precinct captain. I said, oh, okay, I want to do that. So I volunteered and I became the prison captain. But I still want to do more. And what really bothered me was the communism that I see everywhere. So later I joined the Loudoun County Republican Women's Club, and they are very active. They send out emails, and one of them is, go to school board. And so I asked them, you say, I don't have kids in school anymore. They said, doesn't matter. I said, what do I say? Whatever you want to say. I said, okay, I know what I want to say. So I went there and just told them that whatever they are doing remind me of the Cultural Revolution, and that is Marxism. And I had no clue. So I came back home. I said I did my duty, and I went to the local school and got involved, had no clue, was not prepared that the video went viral.
I've been very alarmed about what's going on in our school. You are now teaching, training our children to be social justice warriors and to loathe our country and our history. Growing up in Mao's China, all this seemed very familiar. The communist regime used the same critical theory to divide people. The only difference is they use class instead of race. During the Cultural Revolution, I witnessed students and teachers again turn against each other. We changed school names to be politically correct. We were taught to denounce our heritage. The Red Guards destroy anything that is not communist, old statues, books, and anything else. We are also encouraged to report on each other, just like the Student Equity Ambassador Program and the Bias Reporting System. This is indeed the American version of the Chinese Cultural Revolution. The critical race theory has its roots in cultural Marxism. It should have no place in our schools.
I think part of your power is that you are an eyewitness. I mean, you were there, you saw the Cultural Revolution, you know how bad it can get. And I think that gives you a truth-telling component that's very, very powerful.
But I would say that my next big step was when Fox News called. I said, oh my God, I did not sign up for this. I can't talk. I can't go public. This is terrifying. And I thought over, and they called, said, you have to give an answer. And they texted me and they said they want to interview me that evening. I said, oh my God, a big decision. And so finally I decided, this is not about me. This is about the country I love. So I text back and said, yes. And I was wondering, if I did not do that, my video, you know, went viral. I think probably eventually would die down. And just because I went to Hannity and later I keep on talking and talking, I think that helped to make an impact.
Well, I praise you for your courage and your willingness to dedicate time and effort to this. It's remarkable. Let me switch now to Adam Waldeck. First of all, would you tell us just for a little bit, what is 1776 Action?
1776 Action was really just created to, in a way, try to provide some air cover to the parents that are out there fighting back against really toxic anti-American curriculum. And so we see ourselves as an ally of patriotic parents and other citizens who are concerned about the direction of K-12 schools. And so our goal is just to sort of jump into the fight and try to be as effective as possible and try to kind of move the needle of public opinion and try to ensure that when people go to vote, whether from school board up, that this is really one of the top two or three issues in their mind.
Adam, is it your sense as you talk around the country to people that having had this period of parents watching what their kids were actually being taught because they were online really was eye-opening for a lot of parents?
I think it was the number one thing. I don't know that this ever would have happened if it weren't for all the learning from home. So if you want to look at a silver lining in terms of a really bad situation, it woke a lot of people up. But I mean, almost every parent that I talked to, it was because they would be home. You know, normally it would be your kid would come home. How was school today? Good. What'd you do? Nothing. That was me, at least when I was in school. And now, you know, they would hear something and just be like, what did they just say? You know, and I think that's the number one reason, far and away. I think everybody kind of had an understanding that this kind of kookiness was already happening for a long time on college campuses, but I don't think they had any understanding of how deep it had already been ingrained in K-12.
When you helped with the big crowd in Loudoun County, were you surprised at the size of the turnout?
Not really, in a way. I mean, it was great to see, but I mean, this issue just became such a big thing there. It was getting closer to the election, so there was a lot of energy, a lot of interest. We did that in conjunction with Ian Pryor and Fight for Schools, and he pretty much is sort of the main guy running the whole recall campaigns there in Loudoun County. So they're deep, deep, deep in this fight. We also had Dr. Carson with us, and he's obviously somebody that a lot of people wanted to hear from, as well as Glenn Youngkin and Winsome Sears. So it was great to see. At first, there was a line of cars all the way out to the highway. I mean, it was pretty wild.
That's great. Now, 1776 has been active around the country. Can you share with us what are some of the election results you see around the country that are giving you encouragement?
First, I would just say a couple interesting just kind of data points that don't even necessarily relate to a specific race. But we learned that in a typical year, you see between 20 and 30 school board recall efforts around the country. And in 2021, there have been 84 so far, which is a massive, massive jump. Also, in one particular election in Iowa that we were involved with, there were three candidates there running in Johnston, Iowa. And they signed our pledge, and we went out and did a whole kind of campaign telling people in the school board district to vote for them through text messaging and mail and things like that. They all won. They defeated the vice president and president of the school board, flipped control of the school board, and it was an increase of over 100% turnout over the last time that they all voted. And also, there's just been a jump of in terms of the numbers of people that are running. In a number of the races that happened this year, where CRT was identified as a main issue, there was almost a 40% increase in the number of candidates that were running for these seats. So there's just a lot more involvement. And I think that that is a really good thing overall, because I think a lot of people, stuff was going on kind of under their noses that they weren't paying attention to. So I think in many ways, there's a sort of a rediscovering of the responsibilities of self-government and democracy that's going on that I think is really healthy. And our goal was really just to try to nail down candidates on where they stand on this so that there's really transparency and accountability with the voters.
Let me ask you, at the same time that you're expanding democracy, having recalls, winning elections, you have this whole process where the White House collaborated with the National School Board Association to set up the FBI actually tracking down parents. I mean, to what extent is that a direct threat to democracy?
Oh, it's a massive threat to democracy. But I mean, I guess the good news is that this was exposed almost immediately. And we just found out the other day that it looks like Attorney General Garland may have been a little bit dishonest in terms of describing the police powers that were actually being used. And that's already out there. So I think there's a major magnifying glass on this activity. Maybe this would have gone under the radar before, but it's extremely dangerous. But I do think that a lot of the parents that are involved in this fight, they are very courageous. And I think that if anything, this is sort of strengthening their resolve. I mean, maybe some might be a little bit less likely to speak out, but I think this is really kind of a boost for the efforts because it's a wake-up call to what they're really fighting against. It's a reminder.
Yeah, and I noticed that a number of the state-level school board associations have actually withdrawn now.
Yes.
From the national association.
I think almost half.
Half of them, wow.
Yeah, like 22 or something like that. It ends up being, I think, a huge embarrassment for the National School Board Association.
Well, but that's the way it should be, I think. Did it strike you that it's a little bit like a totalitarian system when you suddenly have the FBI looking at parents? I mean, not looking at terrorists or murderers or foreign agents, but looking at parents. Didn't that sort of bring back bad memories?
Of course. And it was shocking that they would even go that far. And I was invited by Moms for America, and we had a rally and a press conference in front of the National School Board Association, and I made a speech there. And I just started to learn to tweet. I tweet out yesterday, And I use my photo at the school board and then the tank man in Tiananmen Square, if you remember that. And I said, we have a choice here. We can resist in front of the school board now, or we can resist in front of tanks later. Yes, if we let it go, and you know, people have fears. Yes, I understand. But we have to overcome fears, because right now we're dealing with fears. Later, we'll deal with terror.
I thought the way you did that, the pictures you had in your tweet were so good. I retweeted you yesterday afternoon.
Thank you.
I thought that was really creative and really well done. Let me ask you, Adam, I think at the rally that you had in Loudoun County, you had some 10 local candidates sign the 1776 pledge on stage. How did they do in the election?
I think most of them were fairly successful. I'd have to go back and look at some of them. I know at least a handful of them won. I mean, it was kind of all across the board victory for Virginia overall. We weren't actively in there campaigning on behalf of them, so we haven't been super in touch with some of them as opposed to some other states, but I think at least a good number of them were successful.
Since you look at the whole country, Adam, what's your advice for parents who want to speak at school board meetings or run for school board?
They should do it. I think that there is this feeling from people that that's sort of like, ooh, that's not something that I do. I said to somebody the other day, we are the cavalry. There is no one else coming to fix this problem. It's really on us. It's our responsibility as citizens. We can be upset about the direction, but it's also on us to do something about it. I think you're seeing an explosion in terms of more people that are running, but I think that they should just go to the meeting, listen. I think there's a lot of good organizations out there that are also giving good resources in terms of how to find out what's actually been going on. You can do things like a FOIA, like a Freedom of Information Act type thing, where you can kind of see what actually is happening, what's being taught, what are the emails being sent back and forth. I think a lot of times these people forget that they're government employees in a way. And so just get as much information as possible and just stay in the fight and do your best to do the right thing.
So let me ask you, but it struck me that in a dictatorship, you're supposed to shut up, and in a free society, you're supposed to speak up, and that's one of the great differences in those two systems. Does that make sense?
Yes. To me, this is such a journey that I took with so many patriots, especially immigrants. You know, Chinese are seldom involved, and still a lot of them are not involved, but for this campaign for Yangqin, it is just amazing that the Chinese immigrants in Virginia, they got organized and they did so much. They sent out 45,000 postcards in Chinese to the Chinese household and urged them to vote for Yangqin and tell them why. And then they did other things like a two-car parade in Fairfax. And they got so many people, they recruited people as far as New Jersey in Maryland to come and help and door knocking and all that, because they are just like me. They understand what is at stake. And they exactly share the same views and feelings that I have, that we have to save the country because we escaped communism. We do not want to live under communism again. And that's why I see all the immigrants so involved. And this is so hopeful. And I think I'm so confident we will win this war.
I'm confident that with you as one of our volunteers, that we're much stronger than we were before that. You clearly now are completely an American, and you're behaving exactly like an American is supposed to. So it's great. I want to thank both Shi VanVliet and Adam Waldeck for taking the time and joining me today to discuss this vital issue. And Adam, I want to let our listeners know they can learn more about your organization by going to 1776action.org, and we'll have that on our show page. And Shi, sometime down the road, you've got to write a book about your remarkable life. And when you do, I want you to come back and do another podcast, and we'll talk about all the things you've been through.
I want to talk to you, so I guess I have to write a book.
There we go. That will be fun. I look forward to it. Thank you both very, very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you to my guests, Shi VanVliet and Adam Waldeck. You can learn more about how we can defeat critical race theory in our schools on our show page at newsworld.com. Newt's World is produced by Gingrich 360 and iHeartMedia. Our executive producer is Debbie Myers. Our producer is Garnsey Sloan, and our researcher is Rachel Peterson. The artwork for the show was created by Steve Pendley. Special thanks to the team at Gingrich 360. If you've been enjoying Newt's World, I hope you'll go to Apple Podcasts and both rate us with 5 stars and give us a review so others can learn what it's all about. Right now, listeners of Newt's World can sign up for my 3 free weekly columns at gingrich360.com/newsletter. I'm Newt Gingrich. This is Newt's World.